how I meet uncertainty is like, oh, do I have the capacity to deal with this? I'm anticipating something that's going to be hard or
Yeah.
scary or too much or overwhelming. Whereas if I'm looking at mystery, I'm anticipating something that's going to be interesting or different or new or exciting, or like I'm very curious about mystery, whereas I'm wary of uncertainty. And I think underneath that is like my perception of my capacity to manage whatever happens, whether it's uncertain or whether it's mysterious.
Welcome to Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann. This episode with Ellen May on how to navigate the unknown and the mythical deep dark woods is sweet in its timing as we approach the end of 2020 and the beginning of 2021. I don't need to tell you how 2020 has been a lesson in uncertainty, with minor inconveniences for some and life and death situations for others. Whatever mix of challenge and opportunity this year has brought you, it serves us all to be able to meet it with the strength of our personal power. I hope you enjoy how Ellen brings whimsy to this topic and at the same time is so grounded in what this actually looks like in our bodies and our nervous systems, where the rubber meets the road. Ellen helps her clients navigate big and small life changes and initiate themselves into their weirdest, wildest dreams. She's an art therapist and coach trained in somatic experiencing. Mostly, she wants people to know deep in their bones that they are powerful and to be able to access that power to create lives that fit. And the best way she knows to guide people on this journey is to dance with the unknown. She works one-on-one with clients, both in person in the little bubble of paradise of Cairns in far north Queensland, Australia, and worldwide over Zoom. She holds up a lantern in the dark and holds gentle, permissive, and highly trauma-aware space for seekers who know deep in their bones that there's more to life than what they're experiencing. And she helps them heal the hurts that stop them from living their dreams and create lives that feel like magic. She's one of the most curious people she knows and always wants to know what's around that next bend in the path. To celebrate the one-year anniversary of this podcast, I'm hosting a giveaway. You can review the podcast and or share the whole podcast or one of your favorite episodes and enter yourself to win handwritten snail mail or a customized audio practice or a one-on-one Pussy Your Body connection ritual with me. Once you've reviewed it and shared it, you can enter through the link that's in the episode description. Now, I hope you enjoy this conversation with Ellen on walking through the deep, dark woods with your lantern. So welcome, Ellen. Thank you for joining me for a conversation on uncertainty and the unknown and mystery.
My favorite things.
And for anyone listening, you're also welcome to refer to her as Magical Ellen. I actually tried to call her the other day and couldn't find her. I couldn't find you in my phone because I was looking under Ellen rather than Magical Ellen, and I had put you in as Magical Ellen.
That's kind of awesome.
It is, yes.
So even my entry in your phone is unknown.
Yes. Yeah. To start, I'm wondering if you could inspire us with a story of going into the unknown and having it actually go well.
I feel like that's just my whole life, actually. Most recent story was yesterday, actually. When I head into the unknown, I like to have a plan of this is sort of, which sounds a little bit counterintuitive of planning for the unknown, but you have a direction, like a vague idea of this is what I would like to experience, and then sort of head out in that general direction and be open to whatever happening, whatever magic you might encounter on the way. And That's what happened yesterday. We had a plan to go to Bahana Gorge, which is this beautiful walk, and then you get rewarded at the end of this 3.5K walk that's very hilly with this gorgeous waterfall and lots of swimming holes, and that was the plan. We got about halfway down that very hilly walk and looked over the edge of the path, which was quite a steep drop. We were just like, that looks like a pretty amazing swimming hole right there. So we were kind of scouting up and down the edge of the path and found a bit with some rocks. Looked like it might be possible that we got down there. And so we scrambled down and just a few false starts and having to re-navigate our way around these ginormous rocks. And eventually we got down to the bottom where there was this glorious swimming hole, with deep bits and shallow bits and a little waterfall and a cave. And we had the entire place to ourselves, and it wasn't anywhere near as far to walk, which is good because it was a hot, sweaty day. And it was just really affirming again, as usual, that have a plan. This is what I'm going to go do, and be open to other things happening along the way, like magic swimming holes. And
It's a beautiful metaphor too. I've definitely been on bushwalks when I was like, I felt comfortable and like excited to go exploring off the path, and other bushwalks where I was like, no thank you, I'm gonna stick to the path, that does not look safe.
It's important to stay safe when you are adventuring into the unknown. Safe but not rigid, I think is the have an embodied sense of safety of like, this is cool, I can manage this, I'm not gonna, like, we weren't seriously. There was a point where we're like, we should have brought some rope. Then we could have really get down there. But we're like, all right, next time maybe we'll bring some rope.
Yeah. And it's, there's something, there's like a discernment there, isn't there, about what level of risk you're willing to take, and also picking up cues of safety around you and what might or might not be a good chance to take.
Yeah, head prepared into the unknown.
Have you always felt that comfortable with heading into the unknown?
No, I have not. I'm giggling for two reasons. Kind of heading prepared into the unknown has its own challenges of you end up with, but I might need that, and I might need that, and I might need that. I need all of these things.
That's me, like going camping. It's like I'm always the one who remembers to bring the important things, like the Swiss Army knife, and you know, I also think that baby wipes are a necessity for camping. That's my personal opinion.
Yes,
but
table ties and gaffer tape and all the things. And then you're like, why do I have so much stuff in the car? I might need all these things. But then it's for the unknown.
Why does it take me, you know, so many hours to prepare to go away for a weekend? And how do I end up with all this shit that I have to pack and then put away when I get back? It's a double-edged sword.
Mine just all lives in the back of my car. Always ready to go. But it wasn't always like that. To get back to your question from before, I'm thinking about, I actually don't know how many years ago it would have been now, maybe between 15 and 20 years ago, so a while. I remember that I used to live in a house and our washing machine had died an untimely death, and so I had to go around the corner to the laundromat to do my laundry. And if anybody asked me on a Saturday morning, like, do you want to go get a coffee, would you like to come with us to do whatever, we're having a picnic in the park, didn't matter what it was, I was like, oh yeah, but no, I can't, because I have to go do my laundry. It's like rigid, fixed, Saturday morning, laundry time. It didn't really occur to me that I could possibly have gone to the laundromat or any other time during the week. It was so fixed that, no, this is the time that this happens. And if I think about doing it at another time, I get really anxious and kind of like, it makes me feel very uncomfortable. So no, it has to happen at this time.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a funny example, but the like anxiety that you describe is also a very real thing. And I don't remember any examples quite like that, but I definitely relate to, like, if I make a plan and the plan changes, I have not always been so cool with that.
Yes.
The feeling of like, what's happening? It's not, I'm not, you know, the certainty is soothing in a way, because you can predict, you can prepare. It feels safer, even if it isn't necessarily like objectively safer, it feels that way.
And then we get things like global pandemics and COVID, and all of the plans and things, certainty that we thought we had just disappears. And it's like, now what do we do? And we're left with half the world feeling, well, maybe more than half the world feeling super uncomfortable, because the things that they thought they could rely on have evaporated. And we're in this global time of uncertainty. And how do we navigate that in a way that feels good and that has it feeling more like heading into the mystery rather than heading into like panic uncertainty, which is challenging in this situation, like really challenging.
Yeah. I think actually hearing you say that, I think that the last podcast episode we did together, which was about seasons and cycles, I think we did that right around the beginning of the pandemic.
We did.
So it's interesting kind of coming back to that situation again a number of months later.
Yeah, 6 months down the line, we're still in a state of uncertainty and transition time between seasons. Like, I think we were talking about heading into autumn, and we're maybe a little bit further in, but I think we're still in that autumn phase of, we haven't quite hit whatever winter is going to look like. We're still transitioning, that's the word, from what we had into whatever's next. And it's scary. And for people like me that used to have a plan and then a plan B and then a plan C, so I always had an option to have all of that just taken away. It's like, oh well, we're going to get really good at not knowing what's happening. And
So when you say autumn, you mean kind of like the energy of autumn happening in terms of what's happening to our kind of societies on a more global scale, as we're being confronted with these big changes. It's kind of forcing us to reevaluate, and the old way of doing things is starting to fall away, but it's not necessarily clear where it's going yet. Is that right?
Yeah. It's kind of a time of slowing down. And as you were saying, like reevaluating, reassessing, we can't just be all go, all summer energy, keep on going like the kind of full heat of summer anymore. It's not available, and we have to stop and take stock. And it's the harvest time, autumn, a lot of the time. So we're looking at, well, look, right, what have we got? What are we left with? We're heading into a different phase. And what do we need to celebrate? What do we need to grieve? And how do we prepare for what's coming?
Yeah, and that is a real time of uncertainty, isn't it? We don't know what's going to happen. Or there's like, even just saying that we don't know what's going to happen, I just felt a little like, in my chest.
Just tell me what to expect so I can plan for it.
Yes. So I do want to come back to like the mystery and looking at it that way. But before we do, I'd love to talk a little bit more about the uncertainty and the unknown, and how the ways that that feels challenging to us. Can you talk a little bit about like a little bit more about the ways that we kind of find maybe a false sense of safety or security in trying to make things certain and defined?
If we think we know what's happening next, then it's settling for our nervous systems. Like if I show you a door and tell you that behind the door there's, I don't know, a chocolate cake and a plate, and you're welcome to go in and eat some, you've got an idea of what to expect, and you're going to open the door kind of being like, oh, this is good, I get cake. And it's sort of, it sets you up for how you might want to respond to what's behind the door. And it's sort of the same. If we think we know what's happening next, then it's easier to be like, oh, okay, cool. That's how we form habits and things with our days. We kind of know, oh, I get up in the morning and I do these things, and then I don't have to think about it so much. It's also kind of not as mentally taxing because we don't have to make so many decisions because we kind of know what's going to happen. If I give you the same door and be like, here's the door, behind this door is something, I'm not going to tell you what's behind the door. It might be good. It might be your worst nightmare. Here's the key. What are you noticing is happening in your body right now?
Oh my God. I'm also noticing your face. I'm as you say that, I'm picturing myself like opening the door, like really kind of on alert, like really like tense, really focusing, paying attention, listening, like all of my senses looking for any little bit of information they might pick up about what's behind the door. I picture myself like maybe listening, turning the knob really slowly and like peeling it open a crack to see if something like jumps out at me or like if I can, what I can see, and just a whole bunch of like hyper alertness. And moving with a lot of, it feels like being like a wound up spring in my body as I imagine opening that door. But I'm looking at your face and you're like.
Yes, this is a certain amount of glee over here, throwing somebody into the unknown. Also because I get to sort of picture what's behind the door. And I know there's probably something great behind this particular door, but you don't know that. And I'm having fun kind of just teasing you a little bit and planting seeds of doubt.
Are you going to tell me what's behind the door?
I don't know. It's a mystery. You can open it and find out. You can tell me what's behind the door. Also, I have full trust that you'll be able to handle whatever it is that's behind that door.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, about the feeling. You were sharing this before we started recording, that behind that need for predictability is a sense that, like, I don't know if I can handle this. I don't trust myself that I could handle this if it doesn't go the way that I think it's going to go, or if it goes the way I don't want it to go.
Yeah, it's sort of that need for certainty it's like a coping mechanism to help our systems feel like they're regulated and able to deal with whatever it is that might be coming next. And it's sort of, I'm just noticing myself take a breath, like, oh, yeah, good. I can deal with whatever's happening next because it's predictable. And so we try and, like, trauma loves certainty. Mm-hmm. So if we know what's happening next, then we know that our system can kind of keep going as it has. There's not going to be any big surprises. There's not going to be anything that we really need to navigate. And so we try and create environments where we have that sense of certainty, whether it's through knowing without a shadow of a doubt that at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning, I'm going to be at the laundromat doing my laundry. Or however we might want to sort of set that up. There's subtler ways that we do it as well. It sort of is a way of managing things feeling too much, or it's a way of managing potential overwhelm, or it's a way of kind of keeping ourselves in a state that feels manageable.
Yeah, in that sense. And when I hear you describe that, it's like a way of keeping things in a way that feels manageable. I get this kind of rush of tenderness for that desire for certainty, because it's just a way of trying to take care of yourself and keep things manageable. That's really human.
Yeah. And that's like all of our management strategies and coping mechanisms and defenses and all of that. Like, they're all things that we've developed that to try and keep ourselves safe and try and keep things feeling okay and manageable. Mm-hmm. And they're really effective because they work. And because here we are having this conversation, and here people are listening to this conversation. So things of whatever we've developed to help us cope with uncertainty has worked. It's effective. It just may not be the way that we'd like to navigate it. It might be a way to manage uncertainty, feeling like, oh shit, anything could happen. And like you were saying before, and I'm not sure that I can trust myself to deal with whatever is going to happen next. So I have to find a way to cope with that feeling of like, it's not so much the uncertainty that is scary. It's my uncertainty that I'm going to be able to manage the uncertainty.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sort of, can I trust myself? Do I have the capacity to deal with whatever might be coming next? Like, is that there, that level of resilience in my nervous system to be able to hold whatever might be behind that door?
Yeah. Well, and
my
just
brain's like, there's a cake behind that door, can totally handle the cake. But yeah.
I just felt like a big sighing exhale as you were saying that. Like, okay.
Yeah.
We used a couple of words there. Could we take a moment just to define what we mean by trauma and what we mean by regulated? You talked about your system, your nervous system being regulated.
Yeah. The simplest way that I like to define trauma is really what happens in our nervous systems when things happen to us or things happen around us. We have experiences that are too much or come at us too fast or sometimes not enough support or too often in the form of like shitty messages that we might get about who we are or how we respond to things.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're not able to stay in a regulated state. And what I mean by regulated is we tend to have a range of resilience where we have the capacity for something to happen and we can maybe be a little bit activated. Like, I'll use the example, since we're doing this door thing, of we've peeked behind the door and the door's slammed and we jump. Mm-hmm. And
I would 100% jump.
Yeah, me too. That's a, like an activated state where we're like, oh, what was that? And we look and we're like, oh, it's just the door. Okay, cool. And we settle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's happened within our range of capacity. We have the capacity to be that activated, go, oh, okay, no, that's cool. And we can come back to more of a connected and grounded place, settled. And sometimes things happen where the door might slam or someone might be having a screaming argument behind the door and we get activated and we can't settle. We get stuck on up the top and we're sort of floating around outside of our capacity to settle and come back down. And then it's harder. It might take time. Some people spend their whole lives hanging out outside of their range of what their nervous system can actually handle, which sometimes looks like people who are all go all the time, like super busy. I've got to have 700. And this was me for a while. Like, I'm managing, like working and studying and doing all the things and going to the gym and having a social life. And all of this feels like, where do I have time to rest? And I,
how many coffees a day?
Some. My instant reaction was like 4, maybe 6. It was a few. Just to sort of manage, because I didn't want to or didn't know how to come back down into a state that was a little bit more grounded and capable of connection. And the ability to regulate is the ability to be activated in some way, whether that's jumping into like a startle, whether it's the door slamming, whether it's getting a little bit depressed, feeling a little bit down, feeling a bit dissociated, but being able to come back into a state of connection. And to be able to kind of ride those waves, because they'll go up and down throughout the day, and it's not necessarily negative things that have you activated. Like, I could open the door and be like, oh my god, cake, and be so excited and that's an activated state, and I could be like, cool, okay, awesome, have the cake, receive the cake, sit down, smell the cake, be like, oh, and then I can come down into a more regulated state and eat the cake.
Yeah.
And then go into a food coma, which is maybe a little bit, and then come back up and be regulated.
Yeah. So what you were describing with being like all go all the time, or having that level of like stuck on is more like the fight or flight mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the freeze mode? Because that's a kind of extra layer of activation over fight or flight, but it looks like less.
Yeah,
right.
It's interesting. It's sort of, instead of jumping out the top of the window and we're hanging out on the roof, I'm really mixing my metaphors today, but we have like a window of tolerance. So this is where we can jump up and down. We can kind of be activated, settle. If we fly out the top of our window, we're sitting on the roof of our house, and that's where the fight flight kind of things are. Or sometimes that energy, that big sympathetic charge, that sort of activated energy becomes way too much, and our system is like, let's just shut the whole thing down. And so we'd fall out the bottom of the window, or we might fall off the roof, which sounds painful. And we hang out in the garden bed under the window where we feel a bit freezy, we feel numb, we feel checked out, we feel a bit dissociated, we're not really present. And if we're stuck in that state for a long time, it can look like depression. It can look like what I had for a long time, which is a mood disorder where I didn't really feel anything. I just felt numb. But because that's all I felt, I thought it was normal. And a lot of people do go undiagnosed with that kind of mood disorder because they're like, oh, well, this is just the way that I feel or don't feel. There is no up or down. It's this kind of numb gray state. And to be stuck on off is kind of... Yeah. Those sorts of qualities tend to show up.
Yeah. I think that information is super useful for people to understand about how our nervous systems work. And when we, of course, this is like a lot of what you do in your work, but being able to track where we're at around that window and when we're getting stuck on or stuck on off in fight or flight or in freeze or in when we get activated and can't bring ourselves back into that window, having that understanding is so helpful. And having that awareness is really, I think, the first step to being able to manage it. And it also then is I'm thinking about if we notice ourselves trying to make something certain, or because we're so uncomfortable with the uncertainty, or just being like really, really uncomfortable with the idea of the unknown, we can use that awareness to kind of manage our level of discomfort, or like use the window. Because that's kind of what's happening, right? When we're getting freaked out about uncertainty and the unknown, is we're not necessarily sitting in that window of tolerance or resilience.
Yeah, particularly when we start to get a little bit panicky or a little bit like, oh shit, I have to sort this out. Oh, like I can't go to bed until this is sorted.
Yes.
I need to finish thing after, like this kind of panicky energy, which comes with like, and it is a sign that maybe we need to just tend to, like, the coping mechanism is working overtime, trying to find a way of bringing that certainty in so that we can feel like things are going to be okay, we can feel like we can manage whatever's coming next. And if we can start to notice that pattern when we're kind of freaking out about the unknown and recognize it for what it is, that, oh, look, I'm doing that thing. What might I need instead? How could I tend to this desire for certainty in a different way of trying to force a false sense of security in there? Like, what could I do instead? What might feel nice? How might I want to navigate this not knowing, instead of trying to say no to all invitations that involve 9 a.m. on Saturday morning because I have to go do my laundry? How might I be able to say yes to these invitations, still have clean clothes and not panic that the times have changed?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about like what might that look like to tend to that. How can we kind of build our capacity to be with uncertainty and the unknown, even if it is at times uncomfortable? Build our capacity so that we're making our decisions in alignment with what we really want, not making decisions reflexively just to get rid of that uncomfortable feeling.
The first thing that really comes to mind is just slow everything down, because when we have that panicky, oh shit, I have to sort this out feeling, like we want to fix it fast. And the keywords in there being fix it. There's something wrong here. We need to get rid of this feeling. I want it out of this feeling. I've got to change, fix, whatever.
Yeah.
It's to just take a breath, take a moment and notice, oh, that's happening. Can I stop before I jump into that and just create a little bit of space around it, a little bit of time around it? Can I slow things down just a little bit? Because there's no room for considered responding to things if we're frantically trying to fix or change or get out of how we're feeling.
Slow it down.
Slow it down.
Even just as you said that, I was like, oh, slow it down. That feels good.
Yeah. It feels good. And for some people, it feels really scary.
Yeah.
Slowing it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of, it's a process. It's a learning process of beginning to build a sense of self-trust that whatever's behind the door, I'd be able to manage what's behind the door. Like it could be, I don't know, it could be the bogeyman, but that's fine. I've got the poker from the fire or whatever. I've got like, I can deal with the bogeyman. It could be cake, totally got cake down. It could be, you know, a pathway into this mystical forest.
Yeah.
And I've got the resources to explore this path. It's kind of this feeling of, oh, well, whatever happens, whatever's behind the door, I can deal with it. And that's when the old shit, anything could happen, starts to turn into a, ooh, anything could happen. Instead of being like, oh, fuck, what's coming at me and am I going to have the capacity to deal with it? It's like anything could be coming and I've got the resources.
Yeah.
And a big part of that is having support, like realizing we have to navigate the unknown all by ourselves.
Yes. 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 Let's talk about that more, because I think that is so important, especially because, and I know that I have a tendency to do this for myself too, but when we think a lot about healing and growth and how we want to feel, how we want to be, a lot of the focus is on ourselves as individuals. And we kind of forget that we are part of webs of communities and networks, and that's actually how we were designed. We were designed to be in connection and in support with each other. And that's one of the relationships that you and I have, is that mutual support. And it is like, it's making the biggest difference in my life. And I've been able to step into a period of my life with greater uncertainty, greater risk than before. And that support from you, and knowing that we have that, it's not just that there's support, but that I can really rely on it. It's reliable. And we can trust each other. That makes it feel so much more manageable.
I think that's a really, really important point, that it's particularly when we're trying scary things or we're stepping into more kind of unknown unknowns than perhaps we thought we could or that perhaps we had before. Is if we get to a place that feels really scary or really activating, or we're like well outside of our windows, it's really hard to get back in by ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So having the support of somebody else that's like, oh, well, you've gone through the door and there's like a boogeyman behind your door and like you're freaking out and that's totally cool. And I'm sort of not through the same door. I'm over here being like, oh, well, I can still see that you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to look back at somebody and be like, oh, well, you're okay. And you're looking at me like I'm okay. So maybe I am okay. Maybe I can handle this. Maybe I do have the capacity. And together we can navigate this. It just makes it so much easier to navigate the unknown.
Yeah.
Thinking about my adventure yesterday to the waterfall, if I hadn't been going with a friend, there's probably no way that I would have scrambled down that rock thing on my own.
Yeah.
Because there were two of us and we were egging each other on and being like, oh, well, you believe that I could do it. We both think that we could get down there. Like, it's one of us would be a little bit ahead, being like, yeah, come around this way, go down that way, put your foot there. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And we made it together to the bottom.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, that's also just like a wiser way of approaching the risk, because if you were out bushwalking by yourself, it's a higher risk if you're on your own and something happens. But if you're with someone else, then someone else can take care of you or go for help. It's not really like throwing yourself into some completely unmanageable level of risk. There's like some kind of net there.
Yeah, it's highly unlikely that we're both going to get eaten by a snake.
Have you ever seen a snake in the Aussie bush?
Yes, I have. Many. Usually they're over there.
Yeah.
But there was one time where I was walking by myself and there was this big rustling in the bush and a snake fell out of the bush onto the path directly in front of me and did this whole like squirmy thing, and I jumped about a mile in the air. And then it kind of righted itself and disappeared back into the bush. That was a very scary experience.
What was it doing?
I have no idea what it was doing. It was just sort of having a fit or...
But they do. I mean, most of the time they don't want to attack you, do they? They want to just like piss off and get as far away from you as possible, as long as you give them the space to do that. But coming back to support, can we also tease out a little bit, like, what's the difference between a really nourishing, supportive relationship with someone, whether that's a friend or a practitioner or your partner, versus what's more of a codependent dynamic? And I kind of have like a couple of ideas on that, but I'm curious to hear what you think too.
Yeah. The first things that really come to mind are these two questions, which I really love, which are, what do I need and how am I going to get it? And so I think the difference between a really supportive relationship of navigating the unknown together is this kind of empowered piece of, I can navigate this and I know what to ask for or when to ask, or, and I understand that the people I ask are allowed to have boundaries and they're allowed to say no, or not today, or maybe tomorrow, or I could do it this way, but not that way. And it becomes a dance together of navigating the unknown and navigating the supportive relationship inside of the unknown, rather than, will you fix it for me? Or like, this is broken. I don't know. I give up.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
Saying that, I'm like, there have been times where I have asked people, just tell me what to do.
Yeah, of course.
And
there was
a
time.
But
I've been noticing myself recently with the resurgence of a pattern, and I notice the urge in me to just collapse and want someone else to jump in and save me. It's one of those things that, I think of like growth and healing as a spiral. And so you come back around to the same patterns or experiences or feelings, but it's a little bit different each time. And this time I'm like, I'm able to notice it and feel it without like being overtaken by it as much as I have previously, but the feeling is there. Like sometimes, don't you just want someone to fix it for you? My God.
Yes, I do. I love it when I'm feeling overwhelmed and someone just tells me what to do, but it has to be the right person telling me in the right way things that I already wanted to do, because telling me what to do and it's like, don't tell me what to do. But part of me is like, please do tell me what to do. If you tell me like that and tell me this, then I won't do it. But if you tell me what to do and it's that, and then okay, I'm going to be like so grateful. Really interesting how there's like such defined parameters on the way that I will accept support when I'm in that codependent, like, I want you to fix it, but not like that. Whereas if there's like a little bit more, it's again the slowing down and creating a little bit of space, and they're like, wow, I'm really overwhelmed by what's behind this door. I need a little bit of support. Can I talk this through with you? Or maybe it's enough just to say this is hard and have someone recognize that. Or, creating a little bit of spaciousness to walk together through whatever it is rather than having to navigate the unknown all by yourself.
Yeah. I think to add to that, from the perspective of the person offering support, if it's more on the codependent side of things, it's more like, if I'm helping you, I need to fix you. I need to make it better. I can't handle you being uncomfortable. And so I need to make that uncomfortable feeling go away so that I can be comfortable.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, I can't navigate your uncertainty and your unknown because it's making me uncomfortable. So I'm trying to make your uncertainty certain. Creates this kind of circle of like, well, you're not comfortable with your unknown and I'm not comfortable with my not knowing how to fix your not knowing.
I think the healthier side of it is that if I'm supporting someone, I can feel with them like, oh, that's so uncomfortable. I can be with them in that without trying to jump in with unwanted advice, without trying to fix it or make it better in a way that might not be best for them. It's like I can listen to what kind of support they need and are asking for and offer that. And that I might feel with you, but it's not that I'm not, but I know that the feeling that it's yours, not mine.
Yeah, I think that's a super important point. It's that urge to, I've got to fix it for you. I've got to make that uncomfortable thing go away. It's more about me. It's not really about you. Me making your uncomfortable feeling go away is going to make me feel better. It's not really going to empower you to navigate your unknown in any way at all. Yeah. So it's that, just being able to be really, I guess, comfortable with the discomfort of sitting with someone who's in that uncomfortable place of like, I don't really know what I am or where I'm going or what's happening, or I'm navigating something that feels challenging, and just to be able to sit with somebody in that and be like, I see that that's really super challenging, and I'm just going to sit here with you and I can keep you company in the challenge, and I can believe in your ability to navigate it. But I don't have to fix it or do anything necessarily.
And to kind of like take another step along this thread, how about when someone, this is a question from a listener.
Awesome.
And if anyone else listening has questions to submit for the podcast, you can email me, contact me through my website, and message me through Instagram. But the question from the listener is about how do I navigate uncertainty within myself, and noticing a pattern of like looking to other people for reassurance, but wanting strategies to be able to handle the uncertainty myself. And I imagine maybe a sense of like knowing what to do or not to do.
Mm. I have a few thoughts. I think it's kind of awesome. It's like, how do I navigate uncertainty in myself? I'm going to ask other people outside of me how to navigate it in me. I'm seeking external information, but that's good. And I think it starts with just starting really small, because it's what you want to build that trust that whatever happens, I've got this. Whatever uncertainty sort of shows up in my life, I'm going to be able to navigate it. And that starts by really tuning in to the little needs that we have throughout the day, where it's like, I have a little feeling of like discomfort, or a little feeling of contraction, or a little feeling of anxiety or fear, or it might even be something like, I'm hungry, or I'm thirsty, or I'm tired. Like listening to those little cues from our bodies that we need something. If it's like, oh, I'm feeling really anxious, what might I need? Maybe I just need to reach out and tell a friend that I'm feeling anxious, and can you just tell me that I'm okay? Or if I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed, maybe I just need to take a moment to wrap myself in a blanket and just feel a little bit contained. Or if I'm feeling a little bit kind of cranky, it's like, well, actually, I haven't really eaten for a while. Maybe I need to have a snack. And it sounds really simple, but learning to pick up those tiny little cues of like, this, something doesn't feel right, which the unknown being a scary thing is like a big cue of something doesn't feel right. So if we start with the really small ones and learn to track those and meet those needs consistently, it starts to build that sense of internal self-trust that whatever happens, I'm going to be able to interpret and meet that need. Whatever happens behind the door, it might be a bigger feeling of anxiety, but I've handled little feelings of anxiety, so I know how to do that. I know how to reach out for support, or I know what things I've tried in the past that have helped that feeling settle and feel tended to. And so,
like self-soothing the intensity of that feeling.
Self-soothing, or, you know, knowing enough to reach out for someone to help us soothe, to help us co-regulate that, to tend that feeling. And if we do that enough times, we build a sense of trust that no matter what happens, I'm going to be able to understand what I need, and I'm going to be able to meet that need. Once we have that self-trust, then we feel more confident being able to manage whatever comes our way. And it's easier for us to take risks, because we know that whatever happens as a result of whatever action we try and take, I can deal with it. And that's when we really start to come into our own sense of personal power, and when the unknown that is scary starts to turn into the unknown that is a mystery, and it's like, ooh, anything could happen.
And I, along the same lines, I would add that you can reflect on all of the times in your life when you did handle it, when something went wrong, or something was unexpected, whether it was a good unexpected or bad unexpected, the big things or the little things, when you did handle it, you did find your way. You did make solid choices. You did ask for the kind of help that you needed to handle it. And so, that's also kind of taking in the evidence from all of the ways that you already have that capacity. Because
so much evidence, because here you are. Everything that you've done in your life has worked, because you're here, you've survived.
Everything you've done has kept you alive.
Yes, I remember, that's making me think of, I was in a car accident a few years ago with one of my brothers, and we were standing on the nature strip afterwards, just feeling a bit shocked and a bit sort of like, and my brother turned to me and he's like, well, we still have 100% success rate at staying alive. And that was so exactly what I needed to hear at that moment. And it stayed with me that, like, wow, you're right. I have 100% success rate. It's staying no matter what's happened and how it's happened and how I handled it or didn't handle it. I still have 100% success rate staying alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even though the unknown does feel scary and challenging, we have a 100% success rate at navigating that in some ways, depending on how you look at it, but from a certain light. We may want to get a little bit more skillful at it, and that's cool. It's something that we can work towards, but yeah, we already have the capacity to deal with the unknown.
Yeah. And building that trust is a matter of building that muscle, or the trust builds over time. It's like an accumulation of all of the little events and all of the little occurrences and the big ones that show us that something is reliable. So it's not something that you just like flip a switch necessarily, but it's something that you can gather and focus on and keep building towards.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't go from somebody that refused all invitations of anything because I had to do my laundry to, I think, like this whole year has been an experiment in the unknown for me. Like 5 months ago, I packed up everything that I had, put it all in storage, and moved 2,000 kilometers away north into the unknown just because it felt like a good idea at the time. There's no way that I would have been out of the version of me that couldn't let go of doing her laundry at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. I would not have been able to do that. So it's been a process over years of being able to just test it, build that trust up till it got to a point where I'm like, oh, I'm really feeling the call to just follow this intuition into the unknown and being able to say yes to it and manage it with some degree of grace. Whereas I think if I'd tried to do that 20 years ago, it would have been with a whole lot of terror, if at all.
Oh, that makes me feel tender for you. 20 years ago, Ellen.
Yes. I have just a picture of me sitting at the laundromat at the moment, just being like, is it? Past me. Like, oh, past Ellen. If only I could go back and tell you things are going to be good. How they're going to work out.
What would you say to past Ellen?
That's a good question. I don't know that I would really. I'm trying to think of what I could say to her that wouldn't have her feel like, oh, shit, I'm going to do what?
Yeah.
How much growing and how much change and how painful is it going to be to evolve to the point where I can do that? It's really, I'd probably just tell her everything's going to be fine.
Everything.
And let her believe it or not.
So now I would love you to tell us about uncertainty versus mystery.
Yes, uncertainty versus mystery. And I think we've already touched on this a little bit, like what lies underneath both of those things. Uncertainty to me has a little bit more of a scary quality, or like I'm noticing if I think about the word uncertainty, there's a stillness in my body and there's a little bit of like, I just need to hang back here and check this out first. There's like an uncertain quality to how I'm kind of interface with the word, even just like, oh, I don't know about this. Not sure. Maybe like, what do I need to put in place to make this feel okay? Like I'm that kind of, that sort of, I need a pause. I'm like leaning away a little bit. And then if I think about mystery, there's like a kind of, it feels enticing. There's a more of a leaning towards, and my body feels a little bit softer, and I'm more of like, ooh, what's in there? This looks fun.
Anything could happen.
Anything could happen, and it's going to be magical when it does. And it's really interesting because they're kind of the same thing, but it's like how I meet uncertainty is like, oh, do I have the capacity to deal with this? I'm anticipating something that's going to be hard or scary or too much or overwhelming. Whereas if I'm looking at mystery, I'm anticipating something that's going to be interesting or different or new or exciting, or like I'm very curious about mystery, whereas I'm wary of uncertainty. And I think underneath that is like my perception of my capacity to manage whatever happens, whether it's uncertain or whether it's mysterious.
Yeah. It's exciting.
It's a mystery.
Mystery is definitely like when I think of you and I think of that word, I think of the way that you talk about the deep, dark woods and going in with your lantern and like maybe finding Baba Yaga's house.
Yes. That's on my bucket list, actually. Going into the deep, dark woods to find Baba Yaga's house, which gets around on chicken legs, which is the coolest thing ever. I'm like, I want a walking house that walks around on bird legs. That would just be like my life would be complete if I lived there. But I like the metaphor of the deep, dark woods because it kind of contains everything. It's sort of, there's so much possibility and magic, and it is the unknown. Kind of, that's personified for me, the deep dark woods. You can find all sorts of things in there, like monsters and bears and witches, wicked witches and otherwise, and wise women. And it's sort of an archetypal way of understanding life for me. And because I like things to feel weird and wonderful and strange, and I do really want my life to be like a fairy tale, probably not a Disney version, but like a sort of dark and mysterious fairy tale. Makes me very happy to think about life as the deep dark woods and try and relate to the uncertainties that come up in my own life. Like, oh, well, the varying degrees of success, of course, but how can I turn this into feeling more like a mystery that is enticing, that I'm curious about, rather than an uncertainty of like, oh, fuck, what's what?
Yeah, I love that reframe. I think it helps to kind of, as we were talking about before, tend to the part of you that might feel panicky about uncertainty. But once you've tended to that, then kind of going, ooh, maybe I could reframe this as a mystery and thinking about all of the possibilities. And it's kind of the two sides of like anything, like you said, anything could happen and anything could happen. Like if you don't know what's going to happen, it means that some really amazing things could also happen.
Yes, the whole spectrum is available, and then it just becomes a matter of kind of setting up your choices and, like we were talking about at the beginning, having a plan of like where you want to go or what you want to experience or where you're sort of headed when you're setting out into the deep dark woods. You don't just kind of running blindly, even though there is no way of knowing what's going to happen. It's like, at least if I'm trying to get to Baba Yaga's house, or I'm trying to get to creating this experience or having that relationship or creating this piece of art or whatever it might be, it's like, at least I've got a direction that I'm headed in. And then when things come up on the way that feel a little bit on the uncertain thing or that panicky energy, it's like, oh, that's a sign I need a little bit more support, either from myself or from somebody else.
Yeah.
And then I can tell them, here's where I'm going. Do you know the way? Can you help me with this step?
You can always stop and ask for directions.
Exactly. Which is often what I do when I'm starting to feel a little bit of that panicky energy is sort of like, oh, that's a sign that I need to stop and ask for some directions or either look at Google Maps or
consult a map sometimes of some sort.
Consult a map of some sort, whether that's, you know, reaching out to my therapist or a friend or just taking a moment with myself to like, oh, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. Let's just take the afternoon off, tending to the panic so that it starts to feel mysterious again, and then off we go.
Yeah. You had a quote from, I think it was an artist.
Her name's Flora Bolle, and I love her style of painting. She teaches intuitive painting where you don't really set out to think, I'm going to paint a I don't know why a chicken is in my head, but I'm going to paint a chicken.
I think because of Baba Yaga's house.
Oh, yeah, that'd be it. Yeah, her whole kind of ethos and is described as make bold commitments but be open to change. And so in the context of creating art, it's like, I'm going to paint half this canvas bright red, but I'm going to be open to the fact that maybe in 10 minutes I'm going to paint it blue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's this kind of, I'm making a bold commitment of we're going to go and explore this waterfall, but I'm going to be open to change that maybe halfway there we're going to go like, actually, we want to go down to that swimming hole. Or I'm sort of making the commitment of I'm packing up my whole life and I'm moving 2,000 kilometers north to see what's going to happen next. And I'm being open to change and things evolving and on the way. So I think that's a really nice way of just phrasing how to navigate the unknown. Have a direction, have a desire, have a thing that you are aiming for, and then be open to whatever happens on the way.
Mm. Yeah. And I love the permission to change your mind or to make a new decision along the way. Change your mind as many times as you want.
Yes.
That feels very liberating.
I was thinking, I wish I could remember the first time I changed my mind about needing to go to the laundromat on Saturday morning.
As you keep talking about the laundromat, though, I'm remembering the time that you found the laundromat birds. I think it was not long before you made that 2,000 kilometer move.
Yes, that's true. And that was an unplanned delight. It wasn't 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. It was like, I need some clean clothes. And there were these birds. It was awesome. It was sunset. And these little birds, I don't know what they were just flying in into the laundromat, doing laps of the ceiling and then flying back out again. Mm-hmm. It was really good.
So I would like to ask you about what you do with clients, how people can work with you, how people can find you. And then I have one more question for you, and I'm going to ask you to read that post that we talked about.
Awesome. Yes. My work with clients is all about navigating the unknown. It probably will come as no surprise.
The look on your face really, right now, you're so delighted.
I am. It's really fun helping people navigate the unknown and helping people find delight in their unknowns and knowing that it doesn't have to be scary and overwhelming. And, you know, there's space for that if it is, but there's also so much room for delight and play and curiosity and all of the good things. I use a combination of coaching, of somatic experiencing, which is a really beautiful way of helping to increase the capacity for our nervous systems to deal with whatever comes in the unknown. Like we were talking about earlier with our window of tolerance and the things that we can experience and still be able to feel good, feel okay. So I do a lot of that and also mixing in art therapy as well, which is very fun. And it's sort of, I like to say, optional since a lot of my work is on Zoom, although if you're local to Cairns, come and hang out and we can do it in person. We can either use physical art or just use a lot of mental imagery and kind of the creative process as a little bit more of an abstract thing to inform the way that we navigate the deep dark woods and go on adventures and see where we end up.
And Ellen has a Facebook group called The Grand Adventure, and she goes live in there. And sometimes you can do guided art journeys with her in there.
Every Friday, it's usually a guided art journey at the moment because I'm having Friday, fun.
That's Friday Aussie time, which would be Thursday America time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about Europe.
Yes, it would be probably the middle of the night in Europe, unfortunately. But the replays are always there. So if you want to come and play afterwards, I do check back and see if there's any comments or questions or any of that. And we have a theme that we explore every week, which is quite fun. And I do take requests for themes if you have anything. We did do The Unknown a while ago. Maybe it's due for a refresh.
Yeah, a new visit. And especially with your somatic experiencing training, can you talk to the level of trauma that you are trained to work with for people who may identify as carrying trauma themselves?
That's a tricky question. It would be the kind of thing that I would say, jump on a call and let's talk about it. Let's talk about where you're at, what you've experienced, what you might want holding, and we can feel each other out and see, does your nervous system feel safe with me? Does my nervous system feel safe with you? Does this feel like something we'd like to navigate together? Because it's kind of a tricky, I've been
case
trained.
By case.
Yeah, case by case. Because I can work with lots of different kinds of traumas and experiences and life paths. And it's the kind of thing that it's a good thing to connect either in person or over Zoom. And then we can just feel each other out and say, does this feel like it would be supportive and useful and good to navigate the next step in this adventure together?
Awesome. And I 100% would recommend you, because we have a relationship where we support each other all the time. So I have personally experienced Ellen's capacity, which is very deep and loving. And you have this, like, it's always enough. That your transmission around, like, enoughness and everything is okay. Even if it sucks, it's okay. It's enough.
It's okay that it sucks.
Yeah. That is truly gold.
Yeah. And it's born out of exactly what we were talking about before, like learning to tend to all of those little things that come up, those little feelings of like, oh, I haven't done enough, or, oh, this is a bit not the way I want it to be, or, oh, this really sucks. It's kind of, instead of trying to change it or fix it or make it go away, it's just be like, wow. And it just brings so much kindness to allow those things to be and to give them space and give them tending and make them welcome, knowing that maybe the situation does suck and maybe you do want it to be different, and that's cool. We can work towards having different things come in, making different choices, but it's also okay to be where you are.
It's such a gift. So if you could choose one thing that you would want our dear listeners to take away from this conversation, what would it be?
The first thing that came to mind was like, open the door. I want to see what's behind that door. So maybe it's that, just really encouraging a sense of curiosity about what might be happening next, what might be behind that door, like what might happen if you really let yourself take a step on the path that you really want to walk, or start to create whatever it is in your life that you really want to have happen that maybe feels a little bit scary, but maybe just open the door a crack and have a little look and see where that little next curve on the path might take you.
Yeah.
Experiment with the unknown.
Yeah.
It can be really challenging, but it can also be quite a friendly place sometimes.
I think I would like people to really hear that asking for support, that receiving support can be a really important part of the process. And that support could be a coach or a therapist like you or me. It could be a friend that you trust. It could be a partner, a family member, any person who suits what you need in the moment, but that you're not doing it wrong if you need support. If you need support and you get support, that's doing it right.
Yes. And also that needing support is also probably a sign that you're doing it right, because if you are like I used to be and was adamant that I didn't need support because it's fine, I can do life by myself, I wasn't living a very big life and it wasn't very interesting what I was doing. It was sort of, I was, again, protecting myself from the unknown, being like, no, I'm fine in this little bubble of smallness. So if you're feeling like, oh, I need a bit of support, good. You're on the path into something magical.
Good.
Yeah. Yes.
Could you please finish us off by reading the post that you wrote recently? And this one, what I really love, it really speaks to the feeling of like, it's so uncomfortable that things are unresolved and I haven't done enough. I'm not enough. There's not, I do enough in the day. And when you first read this to me, it was just like a balm for my soul.
Yes. I wrote this a couple of days ago as something that I really needed to hear myself at the end of my day. I was like, I'm just going to write this down in case other people need to hear it too. So it goes, you've done enough with your day. The things you chose to do with the hours and minutes were a good use of your time. And there's nothing more you need to do to make the day worthwhile. And you can put all of the, but I should just, and the never-ending to-do list to one side and let the rest of your evening be filled with spaciousness and ease. And tomorrow, you can let that be filled with spaciousness and ease too. You've done enough and the things you did were good.
Thank you, magical Ellen.
You're very welcome.
It brings me great pleasure to imagine you out there listening to Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann. You can find Ellen in her Facebook group called The Grand Adventure and on her website, ellenmay.com.au. If you enjoyed Ellen's wisdom, you might also like the conversation I had with her in episode 13 about how to navigate the seasons and cycles of life and the power of aligning yourself to the way of the season you're in. If you're curious about working with me in my homecoming coaching program to come home to your body and your sensual sexual nature in a gentle and trauma-aware way, you can book a free one-hour clarity call. It's a no-pressure conversation where we explore what it is you really want and if it's in alignment for us to work together. Find more information and book in on my website at carolann.com.au. You can also connect with me on Instagram as @carolannalive. For a chance to win handwritten snail mail from me, a personalized custom audio practice to guide you to come home to your body and your sensual sexual nature, or a one-on-one pussy your body connection ritual with me, review and or share this podcast. You can review it on Apple for 2 entries. You might share it on a social media story or feed, or send it to a friend by DM, text or email for 1 entry per share. Follow the link in the episode description to enter into the draw. I talk about sexy things a little too much to be able to advertise on social media, so your shares and reviews really help to spread the word and help me and my guests make a bigger impact. May this episode be like a mug of your favorite warm beverage, enjoyed cozy under a blanket while a storm passes by outside.